Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on, let me stand. I'm tired, I'm weak, I'm worn.
Hello, this is Mark Steiner on this August 2nd, our day in history, as we start our program every day. That was the voice that you don't usually hear singing. That was James Baldwin, who was born on this day, on 1924, August the 2nd. One of our greatest literary figures, social and political figures, social and cultural figures, I should say, in this country. We're going to hear a bit from him. He was, we have these Baldwin Awards in Society here in Baldwin. James Baldwin's sister actually lives in Baltimore City. And he was somebody who stood up a long time ago as a black man, as a man who pronounced himself gay before most people in America would admit to that they were gay. He was a man who stood up against racial injustice, a man who grew everything from when he was beaten as a 10-year-old child by police for no reason other than being black on a street corner, to become one of the great literary figures of our time. Who stood up. And before we go to the rest of this day in history, let's hear a bit of James Baldwin's voice as we remember it.
There are days, this is one of them, when you wonder what your role is in this country and what your future is in it. From my point of view, no label, no slogan, and no party, and no skin color, and indeed no religion, is more important than the human being.
Now, when you were starting out as a writer, you were a black, impoverished, homosexual. You must have said to yourself, gee, how disadvantaged can I get?
Well, no, I thought I hit the jackpot.
Oh, great.
It was so outrageous you could not go any further, you know. You had to find a way to use it.
So those are the words of James Baldwin, who was born on this day. Also born on this day, American film director Wes Craven, the great writer Isabel Allende, the Chilean author. Shimon Peres was born, who was the 9th president of Israel on this day as well. And Peter O'Toole, the actor, was born here in 1932. And on this day, another director, Fritz Lang, died, and as did one of my favorite poets, Wallace Stevens, who died in 1955, and Paul Goodman, one of our most important, I think, theoreticians in America about American society, urban world, where we live, took kind of anarchist thinking and brought it to 20th century American thinking and married. He was a very interesting thinker. He passed away. Also passed away on this day, one of the people that I must say, been very honestly, I reviled most of my life, but he did pass away on this day. That was Roy Cohn, who was an American politician. He was in the closet most of his life, but was notorious for his being a counselor to the McCarthy hearings that pilloried people for being who they are politically in this country. And when they went after the left and went after the Communist Party, went after socialists, he was key to that. He passed away. I said William Burroughs. And the music we'll be hearing today, Fela Kuti's birthday, died on this day in 1997. And Fela Kuti was a man who really created the Afro beat in this world. He was a revolutionary political figure who came to this country in the late 1960s. Was enamored and learned a great deal from the Panthers, went back and formed political movements of socialism and Pan-Africanism in Nigeria, stood up to the Nigerian government. He was the first cousin of another man who also stood up, Wale Soyinka, the great Nigerian writer, great writer period. Fela Kuti died on this day in 1997 of AIDS. He was a fighter for social justice his entire life. And so we'll be playing his music throughout this day. This was also the day in 1776 that the U.S. Declaration of Independence was signed. That even though that Declaration of Independence was mostly for white men with money and land, it was a Declaration of Independence that inspired the entire world and inspired people in this country to fight for greater freedoms than always has. It was on this day that that document was signed. And it was on this day that, let's see what else happened on this day. I just lost my page. Here we go, very quickly. Marcus Garvey, in 1920, presented his Back to Africa program to New York City. This was the day, interesting enough, in 1931, Albert Einstein urged all scientists to refuse military work. It was on the same day, in 1939, that he and others urged Franklin Roosevelt to begin the Manhattan Project to develop a nuclear weapon. So I thought that juxtaposition always struck me as very interesting on today. This was the day in 1937 the Marijuana Tax Act was passed in America, which has the effect to make marijuana illegal. And now we're going to the other end where we're saying that marijuana should be legal and stop arresting everyone for using drugs in our country. And so in Uruguay, by the way, just the other day, legalized marijuana in its country, and two of our states in the United States did. The battle is going to take place here in Maryland pretty vociferously in the next legislative session over the legalization of marijuana. We'll be covering that very intensely. And this is the day in 1990 that Iraq invaded Kuwait. That eventually led to the beginning of the Gulf War. And we'll just leave it at that for today because there's so many other things that happened. We'll leave it. Oh, one interesting, this is also the day, given everything we are looking at here today in terms of secrecy in the government, this was the day in 1934 that Adolf Hitler became the Führer of Germany. So with that, let me introduce our guests and say that WEA is supported by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information at AAA.com/discounts. And we have with us in the studio Dr. Margaret Flowers, co-director of It'sOurEconomy.us and co-host of the radio show Clearing the Fog. Good to have you in the studio, Margaret. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me back.
Dr. Richard Vatz is here. Rick Vest, distinguished professor in the Department of Mass Communication and Communication Studies at Towson University, blogs regularly for Red Maryland, a psychology editor for USA Today magazine and editor of Current Psychology. Good to have you in the studio. One second. And we're also joined by Yamara Jones, economic justice contributor for ColorLines.com, who served in the Clinton White House. And Amara, welcome back. Always good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get started on our other topics, let me just ask you a question. Do you know famous people who were born on your birthday?
I do, but not now.
No, but yeah, yeah. I mentioned this for a point.
Yeah.
Mine are Phil Donahue and Jane Fonda. Which is very interesting, of course, because not only has Phil Donahue been favoring some of the leakers that we're going to talk about, but also they are obviously ideologically opposite to me.
Well, Jane Fonda is probably closer to where you are now than she used to be.
Well, she can
unfortunately
be further
for her. But you can join us.
Oh, what do you mean?
410-319-8888. Join us here by phone. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages, or you can tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So yesterday, the Russian Federation gave asylum to Edward Snowden.
For one year.
And this week, Bradley Manning was exonerated on one level when it comes to being allowed to be called a traitor and put in jail for life or executed, but was found guilty under many things under the Espionage Act. And now we're going to have a two-week or three-week series of hearings to see how they're going to sentence Bradley Manning. And the overall arching questions here also have to do with this line America is battling over right now in its consciousness and its political worlds over our right to know as citizens, the idea of leakers or whistleblowers and what role they play in the society, and other people thinking that their act is traitorous. And I go back to the days of Daniel Ellsberg, who actually did release during the Vietnam War top secret documents that exposed to America the lies that took place. Yesterday was the day that was the anniversary of the Gulf of Tonkin, which is where President Lyndon Baines Johnson at the time lied to the American people about the attack on American ships by the North Vietnamese to have an excuse to widen the war in Vietnam, which is an interesting juxtaposition of timing in terms of our history. And those things and more were exposed by Daniel Ellsberg, mm-hmm. that led to the book, The Pentagon Papers. And so the question is, we are at this very interesting juncture, this debate in our society. We see the majority of people in America, at least by some of the polling, saying that they think the federal government should have a right to have some secrecy in dealing with our enemies. but a huge number of people, as you saw by the very close vote in Congress, where several of our congressmen, right-wing, like Andy Harris, people on the left, like Elijah, the left Democratic Party anyway, like Elijah Cummings and Donna Edwards and J.P. Sarbanes, who all voted as well to defund part of the NSA so they couldn't continue this activity. So this is a real – we're at a really critical juncture in America now.
Politics are making strange bedfellows in this.
And so let me start with Amari and go around the room and your kind of overall thoughts about this, what we're facing. Amara Jones.
No problem. I think that what's interesting about the contrast between Manning and Snowden is that, you know, Snowden seems to have had an interest in changing U.S. policy and was very strategic about it in a way that is moving the needle. Bradley Manning seemed to have similar motivations, but the way that it unfolded was sort of less strategic. And one of the ways in which that's playing out is their long-term impact in public policy, which is just something that I think is interesting to note. They're often grouped together, but in my mind, they're actually two very different cases. And I think what's interesting is that, you know, many people are using Edward Snowden's remaining in Russia as a sign that somehow he is, you know, traitorous, that somehow he is not what he is pertaining to be. But the reason why he had to stay in Russia is because if he tried to leave the country, the United States made it very clear that they would grab his plane, particularly if it was headed to South America. So what's interesting is the way in which both Snowden and the United States are creating this dynamic of tension around him and around what's going on. And to your last point about public opinion, I think that the initial reaction by people in Congress and the White House, this is no big deal, that people in America know this, that you know, we shouldn't be concerned about it, has clearly borne out to be the opposite, as people have learned just how invasive, just how violative these programs are. And it's very clear that when congressional members went home and spoke to people in their districts, that there is a grassroots backlash against this amount of government intrusion. And so I don't think that we've seen the last of this. I think the fact that Edward Snowden's going to be in Russia for at least a year is going to add to that. And, you know, this story isn't done.
Margaret.
Sure. Well, I think that you know, it's really imperative that we have people like Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden that are willing to actually tell the truth and let the American public know what's being done by our government, because as more and more is leaked by Snowden, it becomes more clear. And looking at the government's response, it becomes more clear that the government is just flat out lying about everything. I mean, the most recent revelation that, you know, they're saying that this metadata they're collecting is just like looking at your phone records, when in fact, you know, Snowden revealed in Exquisite that they're actually looking at everything, contents of emails, conversations, and that even led just last week in New York to a woman's home being raided by police because she looked online at pressure cookers so she could cook lentils. Shows you how the extreme ridiculousness situation that we're in. And it's really up to, I think, people like those who report to WikiLeaks and outlets like WikiLeaks that will get the truth out, groups like Anonymous that will, you know, hack into Stratfor and let us know what's being done against us by the corporations. I think we're really in a dangerous position in terms of the government's intrusion. They're lying about it and using private corporations to troll through the data that the government collects is a serious breach of our civil rights and the First and Fourth Amendment. And so we need to, as citizens, we need to speak out and be doing more to fight back about this.
Rick.
Well, I obviously have some concerns about our right to know. I have concerns about the NSA, but I really have no respect for Manning or Snowden. I think that they have both violated their oaths. They have both shown that they are as close to being traitorous as you can possibly be. Manning is also utterly irresponsible. He released 700,000 documents. He has no idea what he released. Snowden, he and Snowden have made this information available to our enemies. There's a difference between our right to know and people's right to release information. And we have a representative democracy. It doesn't mean that I think it's working particularly well in this area, and it doesn't mean I'm happy with the NSA surveillance. But as far as I'm concerned, you have here two utterly despicable people. And by the way, it's like civil disobedience. There are times when it's necessary, rarely, but then you accept jail if you accept the system. It's not enough to be in the public interest. It must be clearly critical. In other words, you accept the consequences of your actions. And going off to Russia is not accepting the consequence of your action. And we can get into Putin and his position a little bit later. But I have zero respect, and I think lifetime incarceration certainly at the minimum for Manning and Snowden would be appropriate.
So in your viewpoint, if somebody is told to do something totally unethical because they're ordered to do that, they should do that?
No. What I believe is that if they believe that something is contrary to their morals and their standards, that they should refuse to do it and accept the punishment, because we live in a democracy and they
Bradley
are not—
Bradley Manning is accepting
let me complete,
the punishment.
Let me complete my
He's
answer.
Not.
Let me complete my answer. They are not taking the position that they are against the system of the United States. So when you release data and when you violate promises, you take the punishment. But again, I don't believe it's justified in this case. But B, if they believe it is justified, then they've got to take the punishment for it.
Bradley Manning is taking the punishment. He's been tortured for almost a year. He's been in jail. He admitted. To the guilt. He pled guilty to a number of counts. He has never said he wouldn't take the consequences, but look at how he was treated. I mean, we have a soldier in Iraq who killed a civilian and was put in jail, and he was released because for 7 days he was held without access to a lawyer. Manning was held for months and tortured in Iraq before he was transferred to Quantico, where he was further tortured. Snowden is going to look at that and really think that he's going to be treated fairly in this country. There's a difference between accepting punishment and accepting torture, which is wrong.
I think Manning is utterly despicable. He is revealed.
But that doesn't answer the question that was raised about how he was treated in confinement.
Yeah,
he already stood up and said, I'm guilty.
Even the head of Quantico said that it was wrong.
But I am not justifying the treatment that he received. What I'm saying is—
But you are.
But let me ask this question, all of you. And Mara, let's jump in. Since I can't see you, I know I don't want to lose you here. Jump into what you just heard.
Well, I think the premise that everyone who operates in the government swears an oath to the Constitution. And that oath is to the people of the United States, not to the government. It's not to processes. It's not necessarily into what's legal. It's to what ultimately they believe is in the best interest of the people. And time after time, particularly after World War II, we have said that people who do things that are wrong but hide behind the law are in fact guilty. And so if both of these two people believe that their oaths to the people of the United States are above the technicality of the laws that govern them, then they have a moral duty as citizens, as employees or contractees or former employees of the government to speak out. I think that that's the kind of country we would all want to live in. Now, whether or not that they should be willing to accept punishment, I think, one, the example of Bradley Manning and what was done to him clearly has a chilling effect, is highly discouraging to any other people who want to come forward and do the same. I think that in Snowden's case, I mean, he said early on that he believes eventually that he will be got. He fully understands the long reach of the United States government, but I think is probably doing two things. One, he is very clear that the release of these documents and the release of this information is being done in a careful and considered manner with the Guardian. They're not doing a blanket Julian Assange link of, you know, everything soup to nuts, you know, hundreds of cables with hundreds of countries around the world. It's a very considered release of information that's relevant to activities that the government is doing contrary to the spirit of the Constitution and our highest ideals.
So he's a conflicted traitor.
So what that means is that what that means is one of the key things is that they're giving themselves time to be able to figure out exactly what those documents are. If he just wanted to be a traitor, as you say, if he just wanted to go out and kick the government in the shins and then run off in the sunset, he could have sold this information to the highest bidder and you would have never ever known it.
Yeah,
he could have done a blanket release. This is a very considered release. One of the things that he wants to do is to give it clearly is to give themselves time to do it in a thoughtful manner to have an impact, and that requires time. He has never said that he doesn't believe that ultimately he's going to face justice in the United States. That's not really a question. He said that the week after the documents came out.
Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888, and Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, how you? Thank you, Mr.
Good Clarence. Morning, Clarence.
One of your arguments seems to be that an individual's morals should trump the jobs of the people that are in charge of securing us. So in essence, my morals and what I believe to be morally correct should outweigh what other people whose jobs, who are the experts, say this is what's necessary to keep us secure. And personally, I feel it's all above my pay grade, but that's what one of your guests seems to be arguing. Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Thank you so much, Clarence.
What my argument is that the oath that they take is to the Constitution, which is a contract between them and the people of the United States, not the government of the United States, not necessarily even the laws of the United States, although they pledge to protect those laws after pledging to preserve the Constitution, which is between them and the people of the United States. So it's not about one's morals or ethics being higher than the laws. It's about that your fundamental primary contract, your primary oath, is with the people of the United States and to preserve our ideals. And sometimes that may be in conflict with the law. And where that is in conflict of the law, the people come first.
And it's also a problem with believing, which is, you know, not surprising because that's what we're taught to believe in this country, is that our security state is actually about national security. And it's not about the interest of the American public at all. It's about the interest of the transnational corporations that our government and our army serve to protect and preserve and you know, protect their profits. So, you know, what we're seeing is that our own government is violating the Constitution regularly. And if you don't have people that speak out and make us aware that that's going on, then we as people cannot, you know, expose that and demand that those things be changed. But the security state is actually further increasing our risk around the world. They are not serving our interests. They're serving the profits of the corporations that make all of these technical things that they're using. They're serving the profits of these private corporations that are now receiving government money to troll our data. It's not about our safety.
So when Manning reveals information that it jeopardizes U.S. informants, you don't have a problem with that as long as what he thinks he's
doing. Where's the proof that he did anything that jeopardized a U.S. informant?
He released 700,000 documents that...
Nothing has been proven that he's ever jeopardized anybody.
Okay.
Right. That is true, though, Rick.
Well, but, you know...
So what are you pulling out?
Because there's a paradox there, because you cannot reveal the informants who are endangered. And are you saying that if he did, then your position would change? Because he doesn't even know what he released.
But actually,
what he released was done to WikiLeaks, who then sorted through it and released it carefully. It was also released to places like the New York Times, which were able to redact things before they published it.
They did redact some of it.
You know, what we see in our government is that our government regularly leaks. In Washington, the White House upper levels regularly leak information to the press, regularly leak information to the public, and that's accepted because it's done by them. But when the public is actually releasing information that the government doesn't want us to know, that's different.
We have to. Amara, just 1 second. I'll let you come back. We're going to take a very brief break. We'll go from Amara to Rick, get these two callers in, Eugene and Michael, and move on to different subjects in a few minutes. But let's take a quick break. We'll be right back and let Amara pick up and go to Rick.
Many village and we are in Africa. Those places. here we go. Suffer, suffer for world.
Amen.
Enjoy for heaven.
Amen.
Christians go they yab.
Amen.
In spiritum heavenus.
Amen.
Muslims go they call.
Amen.
Allahu Akbar. Suffer, suffer for world.
Amen.
Enjoy for heaven.
Amen.
Christians go they yab.
Amen.
In spiritum heavenus.
Amen.
Muslims go they call.
Amen.
Allahu Akbar.
Bela Kuti, he died on this day. And that song, I think, is an appropriate part of our conversation. The song that tell that song is Coffin for the Head of State. So,
God.
Fela Kuti. So, not that I'm advocating coffin for our head of state and everybody else's, just as appropriate in terms of the rest of the lyrics in the song, which have to do with the freedom of humankind and what governments often do to take away that freedom of humankind that he wrote and sang about so much.
Very apropos.
We are here with Dr. Mike, please. I want to be very clear about that. I'm not advocating coffins for our head of state or anybody else's head of state. Dr. Margaret Flowers is with us, co-director of itsoureconomy.us, co-host of the radio show Clearing the Fog. Dr. Richard Vatz, a distinguished professor in the Department of Mass Communication and Communication Studies at Towson University, blogs regularly for Red Maryland, psychology editor for USA Today and Current Psychology. And
I'm now in instructional leadership and professional development, by the way.
All right. And Imara Jones, who's economic justice contributor for Color Lines, who served in the Clinton White House. And before we go directly to 410-319-8888, Imara, you were about to have a say, and then we'll go to Rick and go right to the phones.
I mean, once again, to my mind, Bradley Manning and Snowden are two different cases. I don't like to lump them together. I think that from Bradley Manning's case, the fact that there was such a broad release of data, the way that the revelation of sources works is that if you've ever read a cable basically are your personal thoughts about something and what you've heard and what a source may have told you. And so I think it was about Afghanistan and maybe Pakistan, where what was being communicated back to Washington, it was clear to someone who knew the situation where the information they were referring to came from, and that's where the exposure of sources and methods comes from, and that's what puts people in danger. Once again, the 700,000 document release wide open on Julian Assange, who is not The Guardian, it's not Greenwald at The Guardian, it's two very different cases to me, and I don't think that we should lump them together at all. That's not to say that the motivations of the two men, are different or in question. I don't question those, but I do think that in how it was done, the result and the impact, that they are very different document release cases.
Rick, I'll let you come next to Mark, and I do want to get the phone, so I'll let you have a quick comeback, okay. But I do want to get to the phone too.
I just want to add one thing to the discussion that always comes up, and that is the public opinion polls and public support. If we had another 9/11, all of the assumption that we should be more concerned less concerned about security would vanish. In other words, public opinion polls are so variable and so changing on these matters that as soon as you have a crisis, they shift exactly to the opposite side. So any support you have at this moment, and there is a small majority in support of Snowden, for example. You know, it's all irrelevant because those polls are utterly unstable.
Well, we have a very manipulated public, so that's, they're very misinformed, unfortunately. But I think I'm curious, Amara, because you said the impact of Bradley Manning's release, and I haven't seen any negative impact from the documents, which were low-level documents that were released by Bradley Manning. It was really, he said that his intention was to release them so that there could be some public debate about what our country is doing.
Yeah, but it was everything from cables from ambassadors in Ecuador to the Middle East to Africa. It was a broad release, and so many of the cables and so many of the things that he released are personal thoughts of ambassadors or personal thoughts or revelations from intelligence gathering about what was going on in country, and some of those were embarrassing and harmful to the diplomatic relations of the United States, perhaps unnecessarily so, because they were based not necessarily upon a document about what someone was actually doing or a policy of the United States or something that we were taking action on, even though that was the case in a minority. Mostly, they're just the chatter of diplomats, and that's less impactful than revealing you know, a global spy program on hundreds of millions of people around the world, collecting data that the government said that it wasn't. I think that they're just two very different cases, to my mind. In certain things about Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iraq, there were some revelations, but the broad array of documents was just soup to nuts.
But we have to be clear that they did not have a negative impact, because that's one of the lies that's out there in the media, is that Bradley Manning harmed.
I think it did.
Well, how do you know? What kind of short-term interpretation is this? They did not have an impact.
Short-term interpretation.
Yeah,
they haven't had an impact.
Well, they haven't had an impact.
Other than to increase our public discourse and to show.
Well, you know, if I reveal major secrets today of the United States government, you know, you could probably come back in a month and say they don't have any major impact.
Let's say you did it in, but if you were on trial today and it didn't have a major impact while you were on trial, then that's what counts at the moment.
No,
right?
These things have long-term impacts.
I mean, they've
impacts.
Had positive impacts.
Oh.
With the Bradley Manning cables is that they weren't the highest level secrets. They were classified.
Right.
They were basically random thoughts of hundreds of diplomats in the field about what they were hearing, who was saying what gossip they had learned about certain governmental officials.
I'm going to get to the phones here. 410-319-8888. A lot of people are calling in. We were going to switch subjects, but I want our listeners to have a chance at it, and we're going to get to at least one other subject before the end of the hour. But this is very critical, I think, to our country, so we'll stay with it for a bit. Eugene, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning, Eugene.
You know, this argument is about an action that's part of a problem here. And I think the gentleman who thinks this, these two, Bradley Manning and Snowden, are despicable creatures, are at the core of the problem. And the problem is this. You've got a government that has slowly creeping into a kind of a police state mentality. And if that gentleman had read any of the Federalist Papers, one of our founding members realized that was why partly these people should remain armed, because governments can't separate themselves from the will of the people, become a gang upon themselves, and then just go run rampart. Of course, we have that idea that it doesn't happen, but we see it happening. And then the government's these tricks, these administrative and legal tricks, so that it's easy to say, oh, well, if you have a problem, you should report it. But when you report it into a dark hole, and then you're sitting around into a circle that keeps going forever and ever, and they manage to maintain their hegemony or their secrets. So at some point, you have to break that circle. And so I think that the idea that we should be slavish to some law or some government is foolish, and it is humans, us, people who live on this continent, who really should matter, and some rule that somebody has created. And I think that's the problem. And people who feel that he should go to jail, they simply missed the whole point. You know, they've almost lost their humanity in that regard, and I think they need to really revisit it.
Eugene, thanks so much for your call. Let me get another caller in here. We'll let our panelists come back. We have a lot of people calling in, so really have a lot to say about this from across the spectrum. 410-319-8888. Michael, you're on the air.
Yeah, I think that caller, last caller, hit it on the head. Mike got here, Equity Matters. And I just have a real quick question, actually,
sure. After
the point of information, which is, you know, one of the first things they teach you as a entering Morehouse man is about Mike King's or Martin Luther King's adherence to the universal laws,
right?
And so if we're going to talk about apples and apples and versus apples and oranges, what is the role of universal law in what these two gentlemen did relative to the law of the land, and how do we judge them on the great man scale in that regard? Because that if we're going to have that discussion, King followed, as did Gandhi, the universal laws in purposely breaking the laws of the land that were unjust. And so if we're going to have that discussion, then we need to be referring to the precedent within our country as it relates to changing laws and what the ultimate moral and ethical question and guidance is. And so but my question is what is the role in your panelist's mind of the universal laws in this discussion?
That's an important question. Let's tackle that question before we go back to the phones. Vats is snickering. I'm not sure why, but go ahead.
Well, no, I just think that the
I didn't mean to say snickering. That was pejorative. I take that back. Go ahead.
I do not snicker. little Nixon imitation there. I think the next time that one of my students says I want to work for the CIA, I'm going to tell them to go in. And when they say, will you be able to keep our secrets? They say, well, I will, except if they violate some of our universal laws. So I'll only keep your secrets as long as they're not violative of those laws. The fact is that these individuals, Snowden worked for the CIA, and he has an obligation.
He worked for a private company.
Booz Allen.
Who's contracted to the CIA.
Yeah.
Didn't work for the CIA. Let's be clear.
Well, but he what's the difference? I mean, you know,
maybe none. That maybe that's part of the problem.
Well,
there is
but
no
I
difference.
Mean, but I mean, he listen. You make certain commitments, and sometimes you have contractual commitments, and you can make universal law claims. But if you're going to be honest, which I assume is another universal law, when you're applying for a job, you should indicate that those laws supersede the contracts you're going to sign.
Well, I'm very much in agreement with the caller that I think we have to adhere to the higher laws, because what we see happening in our country right now is increasing secrecy, and that's being used as a way to keep the public from being aware of what our policies are doing within our own country and around the world, which is really detrimental to us, to the planet. We're just seeing disregard for human life, disregard for the environment, and so it's absolutely necessary that we as people have this information, that we are able to do what we need to do, much like what Dr. King did, to create real change in this country and to bring back, well, I don't know that it ever actually was there, but to bring our country to a place that's in line with our values and principles of honesty and integrity and respect for life.
You want to say on this, Amara, as well, before we go back to the phones?
I mean, I think two things. I think one, my question was, what's the universal law? I think if you're talking about universal law in the world in terms of the United Nations or what we've agreed to, the universal law is actually in conflict. The UN Charter is a document, a contract between governments, but the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, under some of which this could fall in terms. Is between the peoples of the world. And so you have a conflict between what's in the interest of the government and what's in the interest of the people. So I think that's in conflict. In terms of a higher moral law, I don't know. I think everyone has to answer that for themselves. But my point is that the essential oath that you take is between yourself and the people of the United States. And if you believe that what you're doing is in direct conflict with that sworn oath to the people of the United States, regardless of whether or not it's in conflict of the law or the government or its established administrative authority, then you have a responsibility in order to act and to fulfill your oath as a protection. I don't think that the release of information like this is necessarily contrary to that oath. It very well may be a fulfillment of it.
Rick, very quickly,
if Bin Laden had an American lieutenant and we were going to violate his rights and kill him, that would be upsetting to you too.
Well, first of all, that's just, that's a hypothetical that's meant to make us look ridiculous and to shame us. And so I don't think that it's a fair one. But secondly, I think that you could easily make the case that he had already killed. Let's say I'm gonna extend your hypothetical into something that benefits me. I'm gonna say that the lieutenant was placed in the Bin Laden camp after the bombing of the USS Cole, where he had killed Americans and attacked a ship of the United States, or after the bombings in Tanzania. Let's say, under your scenario, and using the rubric that I set up in terms of the oath that you take to the people of the United States, taking out Bin Laden under those circumstances, I think would be justifiable if we want to play ridiculous hypothetical.
Okay, I'd like to bring it back to the reality and just say that what would be beneficial in all of these cases is if we actually had a due process that worked. I mean, Bin Laden was never tried. We never got to have a real discussion of what that was all about and why that was what happened, and instead he was just executed, and the Americans celebrated the killing of a human being.
As did I.
I did not celebrate it. I think it's despicable.
I think it's wonderful.
I think it's a terrible statement on what our country has become, that we would just kill a human being without, and we're doing it regularly. Obama does it every Tuesday when he reviews his kill list and decides who can be killed without due process, without knowledge that they're even being targeted. So I think these are discussions we need to have.
So you deplore the attack on Bin Laden. Is that correct?
Correct.
You deplore the attack on
Bin Laden. I do.
That's incredible.
And Amara, you're going to say very quickly, you're going to say what?
I, very quickly, once again, I don't like lumping together things that shouldn't be lumping together. The drone program that, you know, ended up killing a 16-year-old innocent citizen of the United States is
as
not
well
the
as
same
almost 200 as, innocent
is,
children
is not the same as having killed someone in a combat operation who's a sworn enemy of the United States and has killed thousands of people and who would have wanted to kill thousands more. Those are not the same thing.
I agree with that.
Let me go back to the phones here. 410-319-8888. Come back to Margaret. Let's go to Tyrone. You're on the air.
How you doing, Mark?
Very well, Tyrone. Welcome.
Clearly, I don't think Bradley Manning or Snowden was aiding the enemy or even being a traitor to their country. But there was the element of risk involved for what they did. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think Amy Goodman had on her show yesterday some high-ranking official who was talking about all the criminal activity that the United States is doing
Banford.
Around the world and even right here at home.
Right.
So the guy who was saying that that Manning and Snowden was despicable for what they've done, well, then what is his position with the government? Because either you condone what the United States is doing or you're against what they're doing. I mean, so I just want to know what is his position on that.
I guess it's
you went in and out. I couldn't get the question.
Do you condone what the U.S. foreign policy and domestic policy is doing?
Well, I mean, the fact is that as it's just kind of a summary of what I've said. I believe that what Manning did and what Snowden did is absolutely unjustifiable. It does not mean that I'm happy with all of the NSA policies. But the fact is that you have the right to criticize. You could have gone to an inspector general with these criticisms. You don't broadcast these, you know, and
well,
you
that's
don't release
the whole issue.
You don't release 700,000
That process doesn't work.
Let me just complete. You don't release 700,000 documents that you have no idea the contents of these documents. And Manning,
though it took him out in the trial that Bradley Manning attempted to take this up the chain of command as he was supposed to inspector general types, and was ignored and told
that's
to
the story
about
over
it.
And over. It that's happened the same told. Thing with Thomas Drake and William Binney. They tried to go through command. Multiple whistleblowers have tried to go through what they thought were appropriate channels, and they've clearly stated that those channels do not function.
I'm not a big government supporter, but they did go through.
Must be very uncomfortable for you at the moment, then, Rick.
Well, there are paradoxes that security is an area that we generally allow government to have some power in. That's right. I'm against big government, but in the area of protecting America's foreign policy and their interests, yeah.
But they're not protecting our interests. They're actually creating greater insecurity for the people of the United States.
Vote them out.
That doesn't work either. That's what gets back to the whole fact that in our country we don't actually have a democracy. We don't actually have elections where the people can have a voice. We have a managed situation where the corporations choose who's going to be on the ballot, and neither one of them usually represent the interests of the people.
On the way to the phones, a quick thought from what you just heard, Amara Jones.
I mean, look, the bottom, what is the most disturbing, and this is why I don't like lumping these two things together, is the fact that what Snowden has revealed is that the security state of the United States is big business, that right. We have over 2 million people and hundreds of companies that are involved in spying on hundreds of millions of people around the world and 300 million people in the United States. And that's something that should set off alarms, bells for everyone. And I think it's one of the reasons why what's the paradox to me is that the area where we should be most concerned about big government, which is in the security apparatus, which is in the state power to decide life and death, which is in the ability to curtail liberties, is the place where they're willing to give the government carte blanche, but then they're distrustful of government to build a road or to ensure that more people have health care. That doesn't make sense to me. The paradox is where we have given a wide berth of government in the area where we should be most frightened and in the areas where we should be least frightened and where the government is actually supposed to have a role to provide economic growth and to help the least of our citizens. We say that that's wrong.
One sentence. I don't want to get the phone
Securing our liberties and securing our freedom is important. Ensuring that everybody has health insurance is not a government, should not be the government process.
I think that's completely backwards. The government is actually is tasked with the general welfare of the public, and this whole myth of liberty and freedom is being used as an excuse to manipulate the public into accepting greater intrusions upon our civil liberties.
410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm just pretty. Hello.
Hi, Mike. Hello. Welcome.
And I love your Devil's Advocate panel person. Basically, America has a dark past, a dark present, and a dark future. Our government has always lied, you know, pretty much since the extermination of a lot of Native Americans and the enslavement of Africans. America pretty much illegally stole this country. So if you want to speed this up, warp speed this up to today's time, American government has always did dirt. And since now the dirt has been exposed, you know, they want to focus just on this guy and, you know, put him in court or whatever, arraign him or whatever. But they never really discussed the dirt that America has did. So how come that was never discussed about the dirty secrets that America has been doing for 400 years or more? I mean, just currently the secrets of this country that has been exposed. So I want to ask your panel, Rallyman exposed some things. How come that was never discussed and put on, you know, on the news and media about the killing of innocent people in other countries, government contracts, you know, a lot of things that America is doing that needs to be exposed. I'm very proud that those two gentlemen spoke up against a government that has always lied and operates illegally. So thank you for your time, and I hope y'all can discuss the real issues here.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you so much for trying to do that.
Yeah, Robert. I mean, that's when you see that we have this very concentrated corporate media that's works hand in hand with the corporations that work hand in hand with our government to shape the message, and they try to distract constantly and keep people away from having the real discussion about what our government is doing, what the government should be like, what the people actually support in this country, and so those conversations are happening outside in the independent media, in the citizens' media, in people's homes, and that's where, you know, unfortunately, that's where right now in this situation those conversations have to take place.
Well, we have a representative democracy. This doesn't give people the right.
Representative who?
Well,
of the big money.
Well, no.
Yes.
Why do you?
Because this feels like the 1880s. We're in the land of the robber barons right now. It's absurd.
Yes, it's absurd.
Look at who's in charge of OMB, Walmart.
Who's
in charge of our treasury?
Who does corporate America support? What presidential candidate does corporate America support?
When the White House is interested in what their policy is going to do, the first thing they do is turn to corporate America to find out what their response is.
In the last election, whom did corporate America support?
They supported both candidates. That's the thing.
A circle. Then you can't be wrong.
No. That's the reality. Is that the Democratic and the Republican parties right now are both corporate parties. They both represent the interests of the corporations. Very little difference. There's some fringe difference on some of the more social issues. But look at the debates, the presidential debates. Romney and Obama agreed almost everything. That's because they're corporate candidates.
Only in the third
so
debate.
As a man who's had his feet both in the White House and as a critic on the outside, Amara, you jump in, please.
Look, I think that, you know, corporate interests are clearly a problem. They clearly have intruded on both parties. I don't think that, I think that there are differences between the Democrats' policies and the Republican policies. I think that what's different is their willingness to use their power and to leverage for whatever they're fighting for. And so in the case of Republicans, they're clearly willing to, you know, enact sequestration and make sure that people don't have medical treatment and throw tens of thousands of people out of Head Start. But the Democrats don't show a similar willingness to fight for their ideals. And so I think that there are differences, but there's a difference in a willingness to fight for them. And that's what shows up. I think that, but on national security issues, unfortunately, there is too much similarity between the two parties. That and leading Democrats are too willing to give carte blanche to the security services if they say, you know, we need this to protect the American people. So I think it depends on what we're talking about. But when it comes to security, there's too much overlap.
Yeah, I mean, we should point out that there are 8 progressive Democrats that voted against that amendment to defund the NSA, and that if they had actually voted, the other way, it would have passed.
Who are those people? Who are you talking about?
Schakowsky was one. I don't have the whole – there's an article on our website, popularresistance.org, that outlines that. Yeah.
Let me just say one thing.
Very quickly, then we'll go to the phones.
This is classic reductio ad absurdum argument. On one side, you have people who say the country is socialist. I don't believe the country is socialist. On the other side, you say – on the other side, you have – by the way, I recognize that. On the other side, you have people who say that the country is run by corporate America. Neither is true. I mean, that's right. Neither is
true.
Have you
spent any time in Washington?
I spent a lot of time in Washington. As a matter of fact, I used to be on the television and radio pretty regularly in Washington.
So on the corporate media.
Well, to you, corporate media is redundant.
It's a good thing we can all laugh at times. I think it's important to do. Should we get another time for a quick caller? Let's go to – you pick the caller. Tell me who you're going to pick. We have so many of them on the screen. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi. I want to speak to the issue of corporate media and basically a bipartisan approach to foreign policy.
Okay, we only have like a minute and a half, so you can –
okay. 4 years ago, there was a coup in Honduras. NPR just did a story on the ungovernability of Honduras. Never has it been pointed out that Bradley Manning's WikiLeaks showed how Obama overruled his State Department to overthrow that democratically elected president. And to this day, Honduras is not allowed into the OAS. Why did we do it? We have now built two more Air Force bases in Honduras. Has there been any public discussion why we're building bases in Honduras?
I appreciate the call. I wish we'd gotten to your call earlier because that's a discussion that we could kind of leap off into, I think, in the coming weeks. If you'd like to email us here, mark@steinershow.org or steinershow@gmail.com with more of what you're talking about. I'd like to see more, and we'll come back to those issues. I want to thank our three guests for being here this hour. Margaret Flowers, always good to have you in the studio.
Thank you, Mark.
You can see their work. It's oureconomy.us and
popularresistance.org.
Mara Jones, economic justice contributor for colorlines.com, and we'll also link to all of his work on the web. Mara, always great to have you with us. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
And Rick Vatz. Always good to have you in the studio. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's always good to be here.
It's always good to have you here.
Thank you.
Reminding you as we go into the break, the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or 877-462-7555. And you're listening now as we go to break to Fela Kuti and his song Zombie, which has to do with people following blindly our governments that got him into trouble with the Nigerian government. We're going to take a break, come back with dialogues with kids from the intersection, kids from Mexico, and kids this summer in an acting intensive. Stay with us.